Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
And welcome into the Monday edition. Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ian Safar here with you on this Monday morning. We are presented by Green Ventures Landscaping for homes and businesses that want to stand out, not blend in. Visit greenventureslandscaping.com. Joe Rex Road, happy Monday morning to you. What's going on?
Not much, but you know, you're going to distract me if you're going to have Charmed up here on the TV. Good era of the classic television show Charmed.
Really good special effects, too, is what I've noticed.
Yeah, no, it's writing special effects. I mean, we got some actors, who, like that dude who was like a dude in a bunch of other stuff whose name no one knows, but yep. Like you know that dude, you know?
I think he was in every commercial from about 2002 to 2007, so
yeah,
it was good.
Kind of plays a creepy guy a lot, yeah, so... but good, good Mother's Day, everybody. You guys do good stuff for your Mother's Days.
Good Mother's Day stuff out there. Ian, how are we doing? What's going on? How'd it all go?
It was fine, thanks. It was pretty relaxing. So yeah, Saturday we hung out. Nicole went to a concert.
Which one?
David Byrne.
Man, I found out late that he was playing, and I was like, damn. But I wanted to go to the Eagles. I went to neither. How was David Byrne? Did you like it?
She said it was awesome.
I went to neither.
She said it was like the best concert she's ever been to.
Yeah, but, so she's a big Talking Heads fan.
Oh, yeah. So her and her friend went to that. So I was on babysitting duty for Mother's Day kind of stuff. And, turned on the grill, made some steaks yesterday.
There we go.
And hung outside. We did outside stuff. Yeah, it was fun.
Joe, we've made it. We finally got to get to ourselves another major championship week in golf here. So I know you've been clamoring for another one. Masters a few weeks ago, we could put that behind us. And now the PGA Championship this week.
Great. Exciting stuff. Can't wait.
I'm very much looking forward to it.
Yeah.
We'll see how it goes.
Check out maybe a couple holes on Sunday.
That's good. Good to know. We got a lot of things going on the program today. Corey Curtis from News 2 will be with us at 8 o'clock. For his weekly visit, we will get into all things Titans and Middle Tennessee sports with him. Looking forward to that. I've got the rant coming up later in the program. We will get into what this Predators general manager search means for Andrew Brunett later in the program as well. All that coming up. And, of course, a lot of stuff on the Tennessee Titans to get to throughout the course of the show today, including some people who look at the roster and say, huh, yikes, not very good. We'll get into that as well coming up. Joe, we begin with the Vandy boys and Tennessee over the weekend. Differing results here. Tennessee had number 4 Texas in town over the weekend in Knoxville, and they win the series. They win Friday 5-1. They win Saturday 14-9, although it got slightly hairy there in the top of the ninth inning. 14-6 lead. You get it to 14-9. But they win, lose on Sunday in the finale, but take 2 of 3 from Texas. I think you'll sign up for that if you're Josh Elander and Tennessee. And on the flip side, Vanderbilt losing 2 of 3 on the road at Missouri. So they lose in 10 innings on Friday. And then, that would have been Friday. I'm doing my math in my head. Friday they lose in 10 innings. They win in 11 innings on Saturday and then lose 4-1 yesterday in the series finale there. So Tennessee winning 2 of 3 against Texas, Vanderbilt losing 2 of 3 against Missouri. What do you make of those two results and what that means for those two respective programs over the weekend?
Yeah, I mean, Tennessee's in good shape. I mean, to be in it, you know, I don't think they're going to host. I don't think you can count them out completely from that. But they're, you know, they close out with Oklahoma, I think.
That's correct.
You know, so they're like, you know, if things went poorly from here, you could still be back in the bubble. If they went really well from here, you could start talking about hosting maybe, but they're probably going to be a 2 or 3 seed. And it's just a big, big deal to win a series over Texas, the number 4 team in the country. So it's amazing that Vanderbilt swept them, and you kind of thought maybe that'll be a, you know, that might be a kind of a turning point. But, you know, the team that has played well since then is Tennessee, put themselves in good position. And I think if you're a Tennessee fan, you have to appreciate what Josh Elander has done to hang in there with this team And then Vanderbilt is – and they got screwed. I mean, Vanderbilt got screwed on the home run thing. I don't know why the tracking why that data isn't good enough.
Yep.
It was a home – I mean, by all accounts, it was a home run. They ruled it a double. They end up losing that game, lose the series. I mean, I don't know for sure, but at this point, with that result, I mean, they might have to get the automatic bid in Hoover, not just – I know before that it was kind of like, you know, you get some really good wins along the way and you can – that might be enough for you. But now at this point, I don't know that that's the case. I think it might have to be the auto bid. So the 19-game streak is – 19-game, 19-year streak of NCAA tournament bids, largest in the sport, is in serious peril now.
It is. They will close out the regular season against South Carolina coming up next week. Hopefully, for all of our sakes, Shane Beamer is not in the city, and we can avoid that for as long as possible. Let's see what happens on that front. Tennessee closing out, as you said, with Oklahoma on the road next weekend, and then the SEC tournament here in a couple weeks. So we're hard to believe that time of year, but the SEC tournament is right around the corner, and then it's into the journey to Omaha in college baseball. So we've gotten there pretty quickly this year. It would be great, Joe, if, like, you know, Tennessee and Vanderbilt were playing like this past weekend or next weekend. That'd be awesome. But
yeah, exactly.
They decided to play the first week in the NCAA tournament.
Yeah, they played, well, I think it was actually Sweet 16 weekend.
Oh,
right?
Yeah, there you go.
It was. Like, Tennessee's playing, Iowa State and then Michigan and they've got this baseball series that no one's paying attention to. Yeah, and if they were playing, I guess Vanderbilt might be in the same spot, which is like you got to win that and then you got to do more, but there'd be stakes. You know, there's always stakes, too, when they face each other, so hopefully they never make that mistake again. Also, on the baseball front, I saw Tony Vitello the other day. It might have been yesterday, but talking about the fans booing the team.
Yep.
So he had a pretty good, interesting quote about that, and he basically said, well, hey, they pay their money, there's a bunch of stuff on Netflix they could be watching, but they paid the money, so they deserve to do it.
It's not going so hot.
No,
not going so
what
hot.
Are they looking at? They're 16-24. Yeah. And we'll, you know, see, you're in a division with, like, with the Padres playing the way are, and obviously the freaking Dodgers.
Yeah.
So you were like,
you're behind the eight ball anyway.
I don't think anybody realistically expected that to be a playoff team this year, but yeah, 16-24 is tough.
On the Stanley Cup playoff side of things, game four coming up tonight between Colorado and Minnesota. Minnesota gets on the board the other night. I think they won 5-1 was the final. So Johnny Hines says, you know what? You're not going to be sweeping me again if you're the Colorado Avalanche. It ain't happening. And we'll see if Minnesota can even that thing up tonight. Vegas and Anaheim are tied at 2. Montreal takes a 2-1 series lead yesterday. And the Carolina Hurricanes have already punched their ticket to the Eastern Conference Final and have not lost a game in the playoffs to this point. So two sweeps for Rod Brind'Amour and the Carolina Hurricanes. Pretty impressive stuff.
Yeah, and as much as, you know, sometimes you sit around for a long time or whatever, people worry about that. To me, in this tournament, every bit of wear and tear that you save is just that means that much more, because everyone's going to lose someone important as they continue to advance in this thing. So that's a pretty great thing for them.
Yeah, and you know, Philadelphia, good story, getting by Pittsburgh in the first round. They had no chance against Carolina.
Outclassed.
Yeah, just no chance against Carolina. So interested to see what those matchups end up being. Montreal looks pretty good right now. They had a bad first game against Buffalo, responded on Friday night, and then basically just pounded Buffalo yesterday. So they're a team that looks like they're good now and is going to be good for a very long time. So that is what I've noticed watching the Montreal Canadiens so far this offseason. And look, we got a good one between Minnesota and San Antonio on the NBA side of things. That one's evened up at 2. Ian's beloved New York Knicks have already dispatched of Philadelphia in a sweep there. So they've punched their ticket to the Eastern Conference Final.
Yeah, they did.
It's a good time. I mean, Ian's living life back there. What if it's Pistons and Knicks coming up, which looks right now like it's going to be.
It will be. I think the Pistons actually did pretty well in the regular season, if I've read that correctly.
Oh, I mean, I think I watched every Pistons-Knicks game this year. And, you know, you can't always translate to the playoffs, but they kicked their butt pretty much every time they played them, I think. But
I think that's correct from what I heard.
For whatever reason, they seem to match up well with them. But, yeah, we'll see. And we'll, you know, I mean, the Cavs got the Pistons back, so That's a big big game four tonight to try to even it up. For I mean, I will say you got to give James Harden credit. He looked like old man River in the first two games, and he responded. I mean, he hit huge shots. He had an all around really good game. They still had a great chance to lose, except for Cade Cunningham with three straight turnovers on three straight possessions in the final like 2 minutes. I'm it's just like, I don't know.
You got to protect the ball a little bit better.
Crazy, son. Man. He's a great player, but my goodness. But hey, James Harden, he looked spry in game three. We'll see if he can keep it up.
Although I will say, you know, in some ways, I'm starting to wonder if the NBA playoffs are just a total waste of time, because I don't know if anybody's going to beat Oklahoma City at all in a game. Like, are they going to lose a game?
I mean, not tonight. They're playing the Lakers. They'll win by 15. It's over. I mean, I still feel like San Antonio could mount a challenge to them.
I agree.
You got Wemby out here throwing elbows, you know.
Didn't know that a flagrant two meant an ejection. Yeah, Wemby, you're out, son. It's a flagrant two. You got to get out of there.
Yeah, that whole thing was strange. But, man, like his elbow, can you imagine that thing?
No.
Connecting with your head the way it did right there? I mean, that pointy-ass elbow.
I mean, what's his wingspan?
It's like 8'4" or something. I mean, I have no idea. It's
absurd. 8 feet.
There you go.
It's insane. An 8 foot wingspan.
Like, I mean, the elbow is like, I mean, it's just like a machete, you know. It's just, that looked uncomfortable. But I hope that's the hope that of the, because I'm sorry. I mean, Pistons Knicks, I'll be all in on it if that's what it is.
Sure.
And it'll be fun. And it's a great thing for whichever of them makes the finals.
Ain't like, neither one of them beating Oklahoma City.
No. They're not beating the Spurs either.
Yeah.
I mean, if it came down to that, it's the Western Conference final will decide the champion.
615-737-1025 is our phone number. 615-737-1025. We are off and running on Robbie and Rex Road today. We will get into the Tennessee Titans coming up next, including a formula here that's taking a look at the Titans roster and where it stacks up against the rest of the National Football League. We'll get into that. Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game. Robbie and Rex Road, live from our Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. We're taking your thoughts at 615-737-1025. Joe, your colleague at The Athletic, Austin Mock, has come out with his NFL projection model, which basically just looks at all the rosters and then ranks them from best to worst. So that's what he's done here, and it factors in some other things like, you know, each player and their impact on a game. You know, obviously Josh Allen is going to mean more than, you know, some of these other quarterbacks around the league. So it factors all those things in. Yeah, the other Josh Allen.
Who's good too, but not as good as this Josh Allen. So he's also Josh Hines Allen now.
That's true. I would probably agree with this. Like, if you asked me who the best roster was right now in the National Football League, I would probably say the LA Rams. And that's what he's got, as the LA Rams there at number one. You could make probably some arguments for other people, but that's where I would go, and that's what his projection says there. So I saw this come out, and I was like, oh, okay. Where would the Titans rank on this? My guess was like 24. I was like, yeah, 24. Did a lot of stuff this offseason. They're not 24. They're 27th in the league, according to Austin Mock's formula. Here's what he says. You know, Cam Ward, the interior defensive line, are the only spots that excite me, and any excitement over Ward is largely based on his status as a former number one pick entering his second year. He wasn't particularly good last season, but he was in a horrible situation, so a major upgrade remains possible. Titans need Carnell Tate to follow in the footsteps of other Ohio State receivers, which we've talked about. Outside of that, the rest of the roster ranks below average. This is the formula and the conclusion that Austin Mock has come to there. The only teams worse than the Titans, according to his projection here, the Raiders, which checks out, the Browns, the Cardinals, the Jets, and the Dolphins. And I believe, Joe, I would agree on all that those teams do have worse rosters than the Tennessee Titans. Your thoughts on the Titans coming in at number 27 on your boy Austin Mock's NFL projection here as it relates to the rosters?
Well, I like this exercise because it does, and again, I don't know how you would do it, because, you know, when we talk about rosters, like we talk about the Rams, I agree with you, but like I also know like 12 dudes, you know? So, I mean, people who follow teams closely actually know who their fourth corner is and who their third guard is. And I mean, I have no clue. you know, and of course the top of the roster stuff is what matters the most. It makes sense, most of these things. It's interesting to me as I look. So basically, for people who don't know, so it's like there's an expected margin of victory thing. So the score is XMOV, okay, expected margin of victory, against an average NFL roster, which is kind of like wins above bubble in college basketball. So the top score is the Rams at plus 6.3. That's their expected margin of victory over the average NFL roster. And then you go down from there all the way down to the Dolphins are minus 7.1, a solid touchdown worse per, and again, this is analysis of every single player on the roster. Like, how much does this player add? You know, some players, it's like, how would you know, you know, much? But that's the thing. Like, if you haven't done anything, you're probably not going to do much to a team score. It's interesting to me that the Chiefs are fourth on this. That seems a little high to me.
I would agree with that.
But that's probably a Mahomes thing, right?
I would assume.
Because like he said in the intro, Austin Mock says, you know, positional value is part of the formula. So if your best player is a quarterback, then, you know, that might give you that might make your, you know, give your score a little bit of a bump that maybe the overall, you know what I mean? But then again, it's like, I do look at the Chiefs as even after they went last year. I mean, who's counting them out? I'm not, because of the Mahomes, right? So I guess in a way I kind of agree with that. But I think of this in terms of I almost sometimes look at these and in my mind it's like set the quarterback aside and then what's the roster look like? Mahomes obviously makes a big difference for them. That's interesting too. The Seahawks are second. I mean, Darnold good, but it's not like that. I don't think that's a Sam Darnold, right? Like,
that's an entirety
juice
of the roster
and the numbers. Thing. That's a yeah. They're just loaded. Yeah, I mean the Titans. Another interesting thing about this is like there's a huge gap between the Giants and Titans. So these scores are like you go 6-3 to 5-3 to 4-1. Then you have a whole bunch of teams between. Like there's like 12 teams. Chiefs at plus 3-1 down to the Texans at plus 2-2. I mean that's less than a point between them, right? With Chargers, Broncos, like good teams: Eagles, Ravens, Packers, Lions, Cowboys. You know. All those teams. It's kind of close. And then you have a bit. You have the Giants are minus 2.5. The Titans go minus 4.8 from there. So according to this model, like one of the big gaps is between, you know, Giants, Panthers. They're at minus 2.5, 2.4. The Titans go down to minus 4.8.
Well, by the way, the Giants are the team ranked right ahead of the Titans.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, it's a massive gap.
Right. So there's a gap between the team right above them and them, which is interesting too. So – you know, the Giants, like the Titans, have a second-year quarterback. So, you can be hopeful and excited about either of them, but neither of them has really proved much, right?
Well, I think all this information, again, not just this Austin Mock piece here, but when you factor in everything that we've kind of discussed this offseason, it's a lot of change. It's a lot of turnover. I think it still shows you that, number one, there's a lot of unproven production on the roster for the Tennessee Titans that has the chance, I think, this year to really take a step forward. Like Cam Ward definitely is unproven right now, but he could take a step forward. I have no idea what Carnell Tate's going to be in his first year. But Oladejo, Falk, like you could look at a lot of positions for the Titans and say, well, I could see it. Like if it works out, then it could end up being pretty good. But there's just no way to know. Like there's not many proven guys that the Titans have right now as it relates to their roster. It also shows you there's still, I think, significant work to do on this roster with Mike Borgonzi. Given everything that they've done this offseason, which, frankly, I think has been a lot. Like, there's been a lot of work done to the Titans roster this offseason. And if you're a fan listening, you're like, yeah. I mean, I would hope that the amount of work that they've done this offseason would correlate to something better than the 27th best roster in the National Football League. And we'll see. Maybe it will. But I just think there's a lot of unknown about this particular team and what they're going to look like here. I think there's some upside that if they start to hit close to that upside with a lot of these guys, then you'll see it swing up dramatically. I also think if you're looking around and we're halfway through the season, it's like, yeah, Cam Ward just hadn't really clicked yet, or Carnell Tate's taking some time to get going, or you're not getting really anything from Falk or Oladejo on the edges. And then you could look at this roster, particularly if they can't stay healthy, which is a big problem, and say, whoa, it gets bare pretty quickly out there.
Yeah, can't find a right guard, can't find a center. you know, all those trouble spots that we've talked about. Yeah, and you know the good thing about something like this is there is so much. I mean, there's just so much young. I mean, really, probably on any NFL team, but probably especially some of these quote unquote rebuilding teams that have had high picks and they're trying to figure it out with young quarterbacks. I mean, there are a lot of guys who probably don't move the needle at all when a model, you know, goes through the roster, but could end up being, you know, really good players. I mean, you know, you mentioned Oladejo. You have Oladejo and Falk. I mean, what could that look like? You know, there's a pretty wide range of what that could be. You know, you mentioned Tate. I mean, even the young receivers from last year, Helm. I mean, there's a lot of guys who, like, you can see it as people, you know, guys who could be good players in the league who have shown signs of it. And it's like, do they actually take that full step or take a significant step this year? There is, you know, there's a lot of young, unproven possibility on the roster.
So I saw Ian Harditz put this out there the other day, who does some fantasy football work for Fantasy Life. And it's the NFL average roster age, like as of right now. Can you guess the top, let's go five teams that are the youngest in the NFL?
Youngest.
You don't have to get them in order, just because there's one of them on there that you're just never going to guess.
Let's see, youngest teams in the NFL. Yeah, I mean, I'd look at, gosh, I mean, I guess I would look at like Raiders, some of these bad teams. Are the Titans? Would the Titans be one?
The Titans are number three.
Okay.
At 25.57, according to this graphic that he's put up.
I mean, the Browns are probably one of the younger
teams.
They're
number four.
Okay. I mean, my gosh, the Dolphins have done so much. I would assume they're probably in there.
They're number one.
Okay. So I got three. So I got Titans,
you got
Browns.
Dolphins, Titans, Browns. So they're 1, 3, and 4, respectively. You're missing number two and number five.
Jets, Cardinals.
Number two, you're never going to get. It's the Kansas City Chiefs.
Wow, no kidding.
That's what it says. Kansas City, average age of 25.40. Number two.
I mean, just imagine if it took Kelsey off, they'd be a teenager team.
Yeah.
Jeez.
And then the Packers are number five at 25.64.
Okay, how about that? Well, that's a great thing if you're the Chiefs and if you're the Packers to be overall that young, right, and still good.
Yeah, I mean, one of the two of them's got a good coach, but yeah, it's great. But Titans, third youngest team in the league,
yeah,
according to this graphic that Ian Harditz put out there of Fantasy Life. So, the more you know.
Yeah, well, that's where, you know, you can look at a lot of different spots of this team and be like, okay, if that guy, you know, maybe it's a little, you'd like to have a young corner like that, and there isn't one. But you have a young safety like that. You have a young linebacker like that. Obviously, we talked about the D-line, you have the edge. Lineman.
Quarterback.
Quarterback, too. So, I mean, even at, you know, running back, I mean, maybe their fifth-round pick pops this year, you know.
615-737-1025, our phone number. More of your thoughts on the Titans. Austin Mock's roster projection at the Athletic has them ranked at 27th. Take more of your thoughts on that. Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game. Taking your thoughts at 615-737-1025. Jared in Spring Hill in the YouTube chat saying, how about them Ravenwood Raptors over the weekend? Joe, what happened? I didn't know the result of this.
Yeah. Wondered if that would come up. Because, of course, Paul Kaharski's sorry ass didn't show up, but of course he had to send a text. Oh, when the Raptors rise and the pressure's high, or some crap. Well, we had some personnel issues, some injuries, some stuff. So congrats to the Ravenwood Raptors. The Nolensville Knights then responded with a 10-0 five-inning win over the Page Patriots to advance. So they both are in sectionals this week. I wish them both good luck.
I'm sure you
more, one of them more than the other. But yes, we were there, and I will say, I you know, there's a lot of trash talk. I mean, one of the parents of our team, who, you know, he's played sports his whole life and coached and everything. He's like, that is the most hated team of my lifetime at any level of sports.
Wow, I had no idea until a few weeks ago that the Ravenwood-Nolensville baseball rivalry was this nasty as it is.
So it was a very tough loss, but I will say I was proud, and you know, they were fine. Ravenwood celebrated. They whooped it up. That you should. It's exactly what we would have done. But you know what? There were no issues. Everyone shook hands, moved on. The complete idiot Ravenwood dad who screamed at people and got hauled away by police a couple weeks ago, he kept his mouth shut.
That's good.
So
it's always so good.
We're fine.
Any high school baseball game that doesn't end in arrest is it's a good time.
Yeah. Yeah. We were bracing for something, but it was good. So good job and congrats to the Raptors. Pachoric, I believe, the lefty for them, did a fantastic job.
That's good.
On the mound.
That's good. Lance on the text line said, this Austin Mock guy had Seattle at 8.6 wins last year. I mean, yeah, look, the model, there's no model out there that's like perfect. It's real life sports. So you can project all you want to.
Yeah.
We're not saying that this is just gospel. We're trying to paint the picture of kind of where the Titans are sitting from a roster standpoint right now. And again, you want to change the roster ranking? Like if you're a Titans fan listening to it, and you're like, 27, that seems pretty low, given all they did this offseason. Well, have Cam Ward be good. Cam Ward's good. That roster's going to shoot right up.
Right. Like, if someone did this, and I honestly don't know how long Austin's been doing this particular thing, but he's done the projections of wins before, too. He has a lot of models. But if someone did this, again, like back when Stroud was a rookie.
Yeah.
I mean, they probably ranked like 31st, and then they did what they did. And some of it, most of it was him, but some of it was other guys coming on. And, you know, there's a lot of guys on all these teams who could move the needle because of this year that's going to come. And we have no idea that they're about to,
yeah.
Right? And what you hope is that the Titans have a bunch of those guys.
What you hope is the Titans have a bunch of those guys. And what you really hope in kind of the middle of all that is your high picks really start to blossom. And to expect that they're all going to blossom this year at the same time, Joe, is probably not living in reality. Like, we've talked about this before when it comes to, like, you know, hope being a strategy. You know, when you're hoping that all these things fall into place and that's going to lead to, like, the maximum, whatever your roster's maximum capability is, very rarely does that happen. So, like, you know, Titans fans, for instance, you're hoping Cam Moore takes a huge step forward. You're hoping Carnell Tate, who you just drafted fourth overall, is instant impact, best receiver on the team, flirting with 1,000 yards in his first year, and you know pretty quickly shows signs that he's going to be an elite receiver in this league for a long time. You're hoping Femi Oladejo in year two becomes an effective pass rusher for you. You're hoping Keldrick Falk in year one can step right in and be an effective pass rush for you. You're hoping you stay healthy at corner. There's a lot of things that you know involve hope with this team right now. And the reality is the likelihood of all of those things happening this year is pretty low, right? Like it's not a high likelihood that all of those things happen. But can you get some of them? Most of them? Or particularly the quarterback? Like that would be the most important one, I think we would all agree. But can you start to get on the way and have some progress with all of them? That would be great.
Right.
And I'm not even factoring in J.C. Latham, who I would also add to that as a part of your high picks.
Yeah. Yeah, so some of that is coaching, right? I mean, some of these things, if you've got a good coaching staff, you know, you figure some of these things have a better chance of coming along. But, yeah, even if it's not all the way on some of those, it's some movement in the positive direction, you know, along with like a Jeff Simmons. You know, he's going to have a – I mean, how long can he maintain the level that he played at last year? You know, is that going to be him for the next couple of years? Is that going to be him this year? You know, then that's – you make some people's jobs easier, but you're still going to have some of these guys emerge on their own. And none more important, of course, than Cam.
Somebody asking about where the Titans were last year in this exercise. The one I'm finding actually took place before the draft last year, so before they drafted – Cam Ward, and the Titans were dead last at 32nd. So between the drafting of Cam Ward and now, they've moved from 32nd to 27th.
There you go. That's progress without winning much. So it's not like they won a bunch of games last year to make you feel better about them. But you have Cam Ward. It's interesting. I mean, Austin says that he's excited about him. I think a lot of people feel that way. But also, it's clearly Cam Ward, and he shouldn't have. didn't like make a huge difference for the Titans roster. And then, you know, that's, I mean, it's just based on performance. Like, the performance wasn't great. He is right that it was a bad situation, but that's where, you know, you hoped you can have some more clarity on that. But yeah, they moved up. So that's the young receivers help with that. I guess Skoronski, the year he had last year, he certainly must be helping some, right, after he played that way.
Sure.
Gray, you know, there's a few guys last year. You need, like, you know, you probably need – you need more than what last year did this year. Is that going
to
happen?
You need your coaching staff to pay off, right? Like, you've got everybody keeps talking about how great this coaching staff is that hasn't played a game yet. You need this coaching staff to get in there and coach them up, for lack of a better term, right? Like, you need, like, J.C. Latham, year three, need to see it this year, right? Like, Cam Ward with Dable involved. You know, we've talked about the concerns in the interior of the offensive line. I mean, even with that, you need to see, like, that Brian Dable acquisition pay off with Cam Ward this year. Same thing with Tate. Like, you know, Tate, of course, it's more about the long term with him, but the Titans clearly felt good enough about him at number four overall with some other options there and available that they think he's got a chance to be a special player. I mean, that's what I have to read from this situation. Otherwise, why are you taking him at number four? So you need to see some signs this year of him being a special player. Doesn't mean he's got to have 1,500 yards in his rookie year, but you need to see some signs of, like, there needs to be four or five plays this year where you look at him and you say, yeah, that was a difference in the game right there, right? Like, it's Carnell Tate making that play. It's a huge difference in the Titans' outcome of the game right there. That needs to happen for you. And that's, you know, it doesn't sound like a lot, but you add that up over the course of the year, that's a lot. That's a big difference in, you know, your quarterback-receiver connection there. You see it all around the league. It makes huge differences in winning and losing games, and that's going to have to happen for the Titans at some point this year with those two.
Yeah. I mean, both of them. But yeah, I mean, Carnell Tate on his own needs to be, like, a year from now. Okay, that's a clear, you know, that's a clear bump to the roster, to the overall score. Whatever one player can do, you know, in the whole, your top team is a +6.3 and your bottom team's a -7.1. Again, that's points against the average roster, you know, so each player is a little fraction of a fraction. But yeah, Carnell Tate, that should be a guy who makes a big difference next year. And yeah, he's got to be a guy who's a consistent playmaker, consistent, right? I mean, to me, right away, starting right away, making some plays. Yeah, he didn't have to have 10 for 150 in the first game, but you'd like a 10 for 150 type game in the first month somewhere.
Yeah, you would. Coming up next, it looked like there was a situation in the NFL that was heading towards disaster that it has now been rectified, and I am, for one, very happy that we will never have to discuss it. We'll get into that coming up next. Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game. Our football offseason coverage brought to you by Tennessee Brew Works. Finely tuned craft beer for finely tuned fans. Tennessee Brew Works, official craft beer of offseason coverage here on 102.5 The Game. Joe, it looked like there was potential for disaster in the National Football League with replacement referees, which we've seen before in the National Football League, that did not go very well. And they were just a few weeks away prior to this weekend from the expiration of the current labor deal between the NFL and the NFL Referees Association. And now they have reached an agreement. It is a 7-year agreement that will keep them in place through the end of 2032. So that means that this season, you're going to have actual National Football League referees out there, Joe, and we don't have to deal with the replacement refs again. So we all remember that when, I guess that, what was that, a decade
2012.
Ago, 2012,
yep.
At this point.
Not good.
Did not go very well for the National Football League. It looked like we could be headed there again, and now they have avoided that. They've reached an agreement just weeks before the deadline, and we get actual NFL officials this year, which I, for one, Joe, I'm excited about. I know that people complain about NFL officiating, and I'm with you. It can be bad at times. And then I think back to 2012 about the replacement referees. I'm like, yeah, NFL officiating's not that bad. It's okay.
Yeah. I mean, all officiating is it's probably true of anything in sports. We all sit back and say, oh, that was a terrible call. That was a whatever, terrible play by someone who does stuff you could never possibly do. And it's true in officiating, too. It's not easy. These guys are pretty freaking good. Yes, of course, they make mistakes. They miss stuff. And I think a lot of the you know, anger over NFL officiating is more about the rules themselves. Like, for example, some of the rule, you know, with the quarterback protection rules, things like that. I wish we had numbers on this, but I'm glad that, you know, they got the money. That's, I mean, if you look at the coverage of this, they got the money they wanted, and then, which is good. They should get. I've been on the soapbox forever, and I'm going to do it with college sports forever until they figure it out. College sports is such a mess that they're so far from, like, understanding this. But in this day and age, you cannot have officials. Officials are some of the most important people in the outcome of these games, and they need to be compensated as such. Like, they just do. I don't. Like, there's no other way to look at it, and people aren't looking at it correctly, especially through the lens of gambling. Like, you have to compensate these people, and you have to make it so that integrity is a lot easier to have as an official of a college or pro sport, where with massive attention, millions watching, billions at stake, and billions being gambled on games. So I'm glad they got money. I wish we had the numbers, because I think it's important to, like, I'd like to know how much of the pie they get. They need more. But also, the officials agreed to more training, more access to them during the offseason, formal training programs, mini camps, things like that, and also a bench, which I think is a good idea. That's basically reserve officials. If poorly performing officials are so bad they need to be replaced, have a bench so someone can – you get in there. And that's a very – so these are all, to me, good things. And, you know, it's – I mean, NFL officials should be making a lot of freaking money. You know, they're supposed to be the best of the best. They should be paid as such. They should be trained as such. And it's never going to be perfect, but it's going to give you the best possible outcome.
Well, I enjoy the – get in there and more access to them in the off season and get everything ready to go. Like, the bench part of this is interesting. Like, I wonder, you know, as the season goes on and there are some officiating crews out there that traditionally don't rate very well, what does that look like? Do they actually pull some of those guys, right? Like, I don't know. But you got to, in order to do that, you have to develop a reliable bench in order to do it. And they kind of neglected that. So, and you know, Gene Steratore's talked about that. Mike Pereira's talked about that. Of, you know, they got to find more officials and kind of that next wave of officials in the National Football League. So I'm interested to see. And we've talked about this. You know, the money part of this. Well, they've also lost some good officials because they've looked at it and said, well, I can make a lot of money on TV where I don't have to be out there all the time and I'm just sitting back on a broadcast and explaining the rules to people. So you've lost some of your best officials by doing that. So the deeper of the bench you could have for this, the better off I am with it. I think that's all good. This seems like, if you're an NFL fan just kind of reading through all this, it seems like a pretty good development over the weekend.
It is. Yeah, for sure. Nate's asking, what about full-time? I mean, you know, again, I think they made some of them, 20-something of them, full-time several years ago. You know, and it's like, you're going to be a year-round employee. Yeah, they all should be to me. But at the same time, I mean, first of all, they should be paid well enough that they wouldn't want another job. I mean, they really should. They should be paid hundreds of thousands of dollars at least, every one of them. I mean, you look at the money involved. And again, look at what one holding call can do to the outcome of a game. I mean, I'm sorry, but like, that's, people are not looking at this, to me, the way they should be. When the money explodes everywhere, it's kind of like before college sports. It's like, gee, you got assistant to the assistant to the regional athletic director making $400K, but your star quarterback's jersey's being sold and he can't get $5 for it. I mean, like, that's kind of stupidity that I see with officiating. Like, they should be paid. So when you say full time, I mean, I think there's still time for some of them to have jobs in the off season, but, like, you know, pay them enough so that they can, like, chill and do some training, you know? And if
I guess, I mean, that's the thing. Like, if you're going to pay them all that money, that's fine, but it needs to come with, like, you're working all the time. Like,
yeah,
you are in the off season. You know, you're getting better at your craft. Like, there needs to be more of an understanding of what's going on. There doesn't need to be all this inconsistency from crew to crew as to, you know, what we're paying attention to one week, what we're not paying attention to the next week, which I know has been a source of frustration for coaches out there of, you know, one crew calls things a certain way, another crew calls things a completely different way, and you're like, well, what am I supposed to teach here, right? Like, there's got to be, I think, more of an emphasis on that kind of stuff as we move forward here.
Yeah, and that's interesting, too, because it does, you know, coaches, they know, this crew calls what they call handsy stuff, you know, and this crew, they let all that stuff go. It's interesting. It's like, is it important to get all the crews on the same? I mean, it'd probably be nice.
Right? I mean, it's the rule. It'd be nice, like, to call the rule. Right. And I know there's different interpretations
there's different interpretations.
Like, you know, it shouldn't be the same like crews every year. That's like, oh, like Ron Torbert's crew is going to call 17 holding penalties in a game. It's like, well, it shouldn't be that way every year. Like, you should, you know, there's enough different games where there's different levels of holding where you should see some fluctuation in that from year to year.
Yeah, no, yeah, you should have more consistency for sure. And that's where, again, so I'd like to see the numbers. Because, you know, I mean, again, you hear about, like, college in particular. I keep going back to that, but it's like $1,000 a game or some crap, $3,000 a game for like an SEC or Big Ten game. That's disgusting. I mean, it really is. Like, do you understand the power these people have? Like, it's an incredible amount of power, and you don't get why maybe you should compensate them. So, I'd love to see the numbers. I hope someone can get to that on the NFL side of things and what the actual numbers are, because there should be pressure to do more. And again, when in tandem with that, yeah, now this is all you do, and that should make it a better product.
The schedule starting to leak out, the NFL schedule coming out later this week.
Oh, boy.
Ian just sent us this. Schefter has put out the first Sunday night football game of the season. Any guesses? September 13th. It's been a Sunday night. I'll give you a hint. It's a Sunday night matchup we've seen maybe a billion times.
Okay, then I'm going to say Chiefs-Bills.
Divisional game.
It is NFC teams. We've seen it at least once a year on Sunday Night Football. Dallas Cowboys, New York Giants.
Oh.
All the time.
Okay.
But that's the first Sunday Night game of the year. Cowboys-Giants.
Mm-hmm. All right. A little bit underwhelming.
I would agree.
But everybody loves the NFC East. You know, got to love your NFC East.
615-737-1025, our phone number, 615-737-1025. Some numbers that the Titans, while in Tennessee, have not hit yet, which, number one, is kind of incredible, and number two, I wonder if the Titans this year can pull either one of them off. We'll get into that coming up next. Robbie and Rex Road, 1025 The Game.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No